Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 11 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting from Windsor, Illinois, and Ray Jenkins of Cargill Corn Milling from Eddyville, Iowa. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
We'll begin our discussion as usual with a list of topics to cover, starting with Bill Mayer at Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, I think we ought to probably touch base on the report that we had yesterday just to see if there's anything there that was really of significance. I think the change in kind of the attitude over the last week as far as the trade maybe getting a little bit concerned about some of the prevent plant and that part of it would be the second thing that I'd probably have on my list.
Matt Bennett from Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting.
Yeah, I definitely think the unplanted acreage is something we need to be looking at pretty closely. I would just basically want to talk about conditions being where they're at and the lack of there really being any, hardly any poor, very poor ratings out there with all the issues that we've heard. And then what are we going to do, how many acres will we end up with on both corn and beans? I'd also like to talk a little bit about the good ethanol numbers we saw yesterday.
And Ray Jenkins of Cargill Corn Milling out of Eddyville, Iowa.
Well, certainly being a little bit further out here in the western corn belt, we seem to be not that far away from this area that's having trouble getting the last of the soybeans planted, so that's certainly an item of concern. And then also farmer marketing patterns. We're seeing a little bit of a shift in how farmers are handling their own crop corn.
Okay, let's start with what conditions look like across the Corn Belt. Maybe we can start with you, Ray. You are located in south central Iowa, I think not right in the midst of the real rainy areas that have been late planting with their soybeans, though, of course, the last crop progress report showed that the southeastern district there was 51%. The South Central District, where you are, I think was at 65%. And then really it was Missouri and Kansas that lagged terribly behind in their soybean planting. What are you hearing from those areas?
Well, some folks probably made some heroic efforts here this week to plant crops under pretty adverse conditions, with the expectations of further rain. And some of that rain arrived today. We're hearing reports here on Thursday of southwest Iowa picking up 2 to 4 inches of rain. System was slow to move east of Interstate 35, but there appear to be multiple opportunities there. And yeah, you're right, that southwest district in Iowa has lagged, as well as right up kind of the Missouri River bottoms up there as well going north.
Will they get it planted, and have you heard talk about prevent plant dates?
Well, with soybeans, it seems like there's always a lot more hope, and people have expectations of more time, but we're just in a pattern where if you need 2.5 to 3 days to dry out to get planted, you get 1.5 to 2. And so I think that by the 15th of the month, if we're looking at an additional system beyond what's coming through this weekend, that I think people are going to start looking at some prevented planting choices pretty hard.
Matt Bennett, your thoughts as a farmer on condition of the crop?
Well, I think, you know, there's very few people that I've talked to in and around a lot of the stuff that I'm doing with Channel that would say that they would trade this year's crop for last year's crop. I've got a lot of guys that are saying, you know, especially right in here in central Illinois where we didn't get 5 inches of rain last weekend, there's a lot of guys saying, hey, I've got a really good crop. But there are some issues. The difference between this year and last year that I'm seeing, especially locally, is the presence of a myriad of things going on early in the season that have caused some stressors that I think we're going to come out later on in the growing season. We get outside Illinois, obviously. There's still a fair amount of issues. And I knew there were some areas last year that had problems after going on the crop tour. You know, I know some of the irrigated ground in Nebraska. You know, those guys didn't have near the crop that they were hoping for. But some of them have gotten a good start this year. But in eastern Nebraska, you know, of course, that's part of the area you were just talking about. So to me, I think 74% good to excellent is good. But I'm not totally sure that we've got this nailed quite just yet. And I feel like there's several different reasons agronomically that I think that the good to excellent is probably a little exaggerated.
Bill Mayer, I'm fairly certain that Strategic Farm Marketing still has a weekly ground table during the growing season to update crop conditions and other things. Have you been privy to those round tables, and what are they telling you?
We conduct those every couple of weeks, and I think last Thursday was our last one of those, and we had a maybe a little bit of surprise when we got into that. Northeastern Missouri, the central Missouri, southwestern Iowa that Ray's talking about, you know, how far behind they were on bean plantings. I guess a couple of things. One is definitely we saw the activity pick up in our office from the crop insurance standpoint, you know, questions on prevent plant. I think this last prediction of rain coming across kind of got a lot of the guys thinking about that. They may have to be making some decisions in the next 10 days or so. As far as, you know, this part of the country, central Illinois, and I guess it's hard to improve on perfect, but I mean, we almost started out, you know, in perfect conditions here early in the spring, and I guess maybe the only way to go from there is down. I think that may be what Matt's saying a little bit, that from both the USDA standpoint, you know, with the yields they've got plugged in, I think, you know, they're putting some awfully good conditions in there. And we started out that way. We've got good conditions. I don't know if we can maintain them through the summer. That's really the question.
John Newton, ag economist here on campus, did some work, and I know this showed up at least on Twitter, probably on the FarmDoc website, though I don't recall seeing it there directly at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, suggesting that as of the crop progress report released last Monday, that would be, what, the June 8th report, about 18 million acres of soybeans were left unplanted in the United States. That's a pretty large number, though we're still only early in June. There's plenty of time to put soybeans in. How concerned should we get, Ray Jenkins, do you think that producers in that area of Iowa, Missouri, Kansas won't actually put those crops in the ground?
Well, I think we're hearing a few reports today out of northwest Missouri and southwest Iowa that this rain that's coming through or has already arrived may be the nail in the coffin for planting soybeans. Now, a lot of these beans are further south and west that remain to be planted, so you do have a little, you have a longer window of time, but there's just a high level of frustration developing out here in the country.
Given that, when you pair that knowledge with what USDA has been reporting in the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, Matt, and they did cut back on carryout or ending stocks for both years, this year and for next, we still have an awful large ending stocks figure. What does it tell you about marketing soybeans for the new crop year?
Well, that's a great question because, as you know, I haven't exactly been a bean bull in the last year or so, really. You know, obviously, coming out of a big South America crop and reports of another maybe uptick in acreage in South America, most of us would expect with the soybean situation that if we get all the beans planted that we were wanting to plant, let alone the increase in acreage some people were calling for, you know, this could be a pretty desolate situation for beans. But this is the one thing that maybe could be the real boon to the bean market is, you know what, if we only plant, you know, 81 or 2 million acres of beans or worse yet, you know, who knows. But the bottom line to me for a producer right now is probably ought to at least take a look and see what happens weather-wise. I don't want to get bullish as the market rises, but I certainly don't want to sell them all either if we come in next week and have a nice market to start the week. I'd like to sell in increments as we move higher, at least lock in some floors as we move higher, because I think that you probably get a little chance at a rally looking at acres if we if this weather forecast verifies.
Where do you want to start?
Well, I think that for producers locally, you know, we've been talking about getting back to that $9 cash situation, which this week we were awfully close to, and some guys were knocking on that door, would be a good place maybe to get a start. But again, I wouldn't be doing a whole lot of it. I think once you move safely above 9, which is obviously a better level than what we see in some time, it definitely gives the producer a little bit better feeling about being able to maybe eke out a profit on some of these beans.
Ending stocks, of course, for soybeans now set at 330 million for the old crop. They're at 475, down from 500 for new crop. Bill, have you thought about new crop marketing for soybeans, and where do you stand in comparison to what you've been hearing from Mr. Bennett?
Yeah, I think kind of the same way as Matt. I know I've been on the show here with him a couple of times over the last few months. We were trying to be pretty aggressive on making sales early. We kind of got to the point where we were pretty comfortable where we were at, and I kind of been looking at that 950 area on November. We couldn't quite get there on this rally. If a person's looking to catch up or, you know, feels like he's comfortable making some additional sales here, I think if you're, let's just say, 30 to 40% sold right now, I'm not sure that you want to get very aggressive at these levels. I'd agree with Matt. I think that you're probably... you have some risk in the current situation if you get a lot higher than that without any kind of call coverage or something against it.
Ray, I know you're in the corn milling business there in Eddyville for Cargill, but do you have thoughts? Sometimes there are regional differences in the way people approach sales for new crop soybeans.
I think a lot of our beans get sold off the combine out here. Obviously, a lot of folks missed the opportunity to sell $10 beans earlier in the year. But I think if cash prices out here in the fall slot would get into that 9 to 925 range, the processors especially would see an uptick in activity.
That's a nice transition point to the question you asked up front. Have farmer marketing patterns changed where you live there in Eddyville, Iowa?
Well, we've had a couple of years where the farmer entered the harvest and post-harvest period severely undermarketed versus historicals. And this year we were blessed with a very large crop in South Central and Southeast Iowa. And yet the farmer didn't aggressively sell the $3.90 to $4 cash price levels that were offered not long after the first of the year out here through the spring and summer months. And what we are seeing has been a steady and consistent increase in spot farmer selling. When I look at our contract runs, I see the names of people who typically would sell 95 to 100% of their corn on a contract, and some of them are choosing the spot a few loads a day, some of them a few a week, but it's like they have now resigned themselves to just taking the average price over time.
Are they taking the average price, or is it because they have built enough infrastructure storage that they are meeting this out at a slower pace?
Well, I think there's a little bit of both. We've had massive bin building in the southeastern part of the state here. And, of course, the farmer owns a lot of the freight capacity to move that to the processor market. But, you know, even in the month of May, which was a heavy fieldwork activity, we had one of our higher farmer movements of the entire marketing year so far.
Matt Bennett, you wanted to talk about ethanol, the good numbers. EIA released another set this week, and we're still using a lot of corn for ethanol.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, I know here about 6 weeks ago, you know, we were talking about, boy, these numbers are looking pretty rough. I think we were clear down to just a shade over 93 million bushels that we used. You know, and there's a lot of talk that there's a slowdown and people are doing some maintenance, you know, and then you come out of that and basically we've increased the amount of corn we're using for ethanol 6 weeks in a row, which I don't remember a run like that. You know, and yesterday being at 104 million bushels is, you know, safely above what we need by, well, it's right at 3 million bushels. So I think that that's a really good sign. And obviously, some of the profitability that crept back in to the ethanol situation was locked in by a lot of these guys, and production looks very good. It looks like we're going to probably end up meeting our USDA goal.
Meeting that goal, but of course USDA, in its WASDE report, Matt, said we're 25 million lower for usage this year. Did you get a chance to hear what Darrell Good has said about those numbers? Because there's an interesting twist in the reason that may happen, right?
I haven't gotten to see what he said, but I do know that a lot of people are talking about the yield could be the big difference with how many gallons we're getting per bushel.
You're right. That's exactly right. So this year, USDA, WASDE has a brand new report, and I don't recall what the name of that report is, though it's at willag.org. I posted there and what Darrell had to say about it in both written form and audio. From the interview we did yesterday on Wednesday with him. But they take a survey now of the ethanol plants and how much corn they're using, as opposed to making a guesstimate, which is what they were using before. And there's some difference between those two. The survey is running 1% more corn, but the volume of ethanol, I think, is up 4% year over year. Your thought process there, I think, is correct, that most of the trade believes that they've gotten more efficient at squeezing gallons out of a bushel of corn, and apparently that may be the case. So there may be some differential that we have to deal with in those numbers, which brings me to the grain stocks report at the end of the month, Bill, because while the trade was looking for some kind of ending stocks increase for corn for this year and at about that 25 million bushel range, I think, it wasn't from ethanol. They thought that it would be from feed and residual based off avian flu. Is there another little bump in the road, do you think, when we get to June 30th, either from the acreage report or, in this case, I'm asking about the grain stocks number?
Yeah, boy, I think the question always becomes when you're doing four reports a year here on the stocks, you know, where are you at and is everything being accounted for? I mean, from what I understand or talking to people, not so much in this part of the country, but more in the West, there's a lot of on-farm storage, probably a higher percentage of the corn on farm than there has been in past years, and I think that makes it more difficult to get an accurate number from a stocks report standpoint. But overall, I guess I would expect the stocks number, if I look at that, I don't know that I have a big conviction that it's going to be some kind of bullish number come out at the end of the month. I think that it's more likely to be bearish than bullish as far as the trade goes and the market goes on the stocks portion of the report. The acres may be a different story. Going back to just one comment on your ethanol thing, Todd, and I think there's been that question as far as efficiency. I mean, I think the formula has been off for a while, but I still think there's some on the ethanol side, some possibility that with the cheaper fuel, you're using more gasoline and you've got more blending. Now, I understand that means more ethanol usage, not necessarily more corn usage, or you have to take that efficiency into consideration. But I still think we may be underestimating that a little bit on that side of it.
So you think the $25 million they dropped it may come back?
I think that it could. I think on the feed side, we probably, this is just my opinion, but I think we probably gave a little bit too much emphasis to the bird flu situation. It looks to me like the pork has come in and tried to make up a big part of that shortfall from the poultry side and from an efficiency standpoint, looking at feeding efficiency. You're probably using more corn, with feeding hogs than you are with chickens. So I don't know. I'm not real bearish from the standpoint of the usage side. I think we're probably underestimating usage as I look forward.
The trade sometime in the last month moved from really bearish, especially for the corn market, to a bottom and then moving higher and became a little friendly with the marketplace. Is there any reason to be anything other than sideways at this point? And Ray, maybe I can start with you.
I think that's probably the best description of the market pattern here right now. The corn crop in general got a high percentage planted in a timely fashion and is quite a bit better suited to go through a period of maybe rough weather here and some excess moisture in places than what we're seeing with the soybeans. I'd be honest, I'm a little perplexed at the lack of interest of putting a risk premium in the bean market yet, but I guess maybe in a week we'll be talking about that.
Matt Bennett?
Well, I think whenever I look at both of these, I would agree with Ray a little bit on this. Beans, I'm surprised, given, having Kansas and Missouri in the 30%, levels, on soybean plains, there hasn't been a little more risk premium put in there. As far as corn goes, it's really hard to get a weather market started with 74% good to excellent on the one hand. But on the other hand, I guess from my vantage point, I feel like, I could be wrong here, but I think in March, USDA might have been a little bit heavy on corn acres. And I'm not so sure that we're going to be down a decent amount in the June report, even though a lot of people ran ahead of schedule. A lot of people had a really hard time getting corn in the ground. So I think when it's all said and done, I'm going to probably be looking for hopefully a little bit of a bump. And I know a lot of other people are hoping for that as well. So whether we get that or not, it'll be interesting. But I think that could be the one thing that could give this corn market a little bit of a shot in the arm.
A sideways market or not, Bill?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good description of it. I think it's. I think we will have some opportunities. If you look at the beans, I think there are some global issues with El Nino and some of the oilseed crops, especially palm oil, that have come into the marketplace too, as along with the problems that we've had in the U.S. So it's still kind of a wide open game on the bean side of it. But we do have some surplus there that we can, we do have some cushion in case we do have problems around the world or in the United States. On the corn side of it, I think the issue really is two things. One is that we've got the market extremely short. We've got the speculator shorter right now than what he's ever been this time of the year, and I think that could come into play. But I think from a farmer marketing standpoint, you have to look at that if you do get any short covering rally out of this, you have to look at that as an opportunity to get caught up on sales or get some additional sales on. Now, the longer term, we're going to see, but I think you almost have to put some kind of a time frame on it. And by the time you get to 4th of July, I guess I'm a little friendly to the corn market longer term, but I don't know from a marketing standpoint that I want to take that risk. I think I need to put some protection in place as we get going in the pollination period if we haven't got anything weather-wise to spark the short covering that I was talking about of the funds.
Hey, Ray, Cargill started last summer or sometime in that range putting up a brand new oil processing plant, canola, I think in the Dakotas. I don't remember if it was north or south, but I think probably North Dakota. When you saw the RFS as reported out by U.S. EPA and what it implies for biodiesel, is there potential there to really drive the soybean market, or is it going to drive vegetable oils in general, or both?
Well, the long-term history of bull markets in soybeans is that they are best when led by the soybean meal fraction rather than oil. But if we're going to continue to build demand base on the oil side, we may have to change our way of thinking.
Do you think that's going to be the case?
Well, I certainly think the RFS is opening the door here on the biodiesel side, and yeah, I think that we're probably in a transitional period here.
Does that mean that, and I know it's product that's the wrong product, but does that mean that soybeans and wheat potentially are back in the driver's seat leading the market either up or down, and that corn is a follower?
I think we could be drifting that way a little bit more, but you know, it's been mentioned that our demand base, especially for livestock here in the United States, is continuing to grow for corn, and you know, it looks like it's going to take a really big crop to keep us from starting at least a modest trend to tighter feed grain stocks over time here.
Anybody else have a comment on what the marketplace looks like, how it's changing? A couple of other things that are coming up. For instance, Monday, the CME group changes are coming. I think the Globex will, the commodity open cry out bits are going away. So Globex will be the only option for trade in the futures market, that is. There will be open outcry for options, and there will be an extended 5 minutes of trade after the end of the day. What do we think of all of that? Bill Mayer, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I guess I've said, and I've said this many times, I think the thing that you lose when you don't have the pit trade is you lose the transparency or some of it, and you don't know who's on the other side of that trade, where you used to be able to say, you know, Company X, they trade for so-and-so commercial, and, you know, they're buying beans, so what's going on? You had some transparency there. Now, we've lost that. I mean, that isn't happening because they're closing the pits. That's happened, you know, as the electronic trade became the major volume force in the market. So I think from our viewpoint, from a farmer viewpoint, I'm not sure that that's a good thing. I think that most of the changes are going to be pretty well, you're not going to see a lot of change there. I think you mentioned on the this afternoon show the trade at settlement that's going to allow elevators to, you know, do pre-hedging, but not really any different than the MOC or market on close used to be. So I don't know that I see a lot of changes from a farmer viewpoint on the changes being made by the Board of Trade, but we've definitely seen those changes take place over the last 5 years that led to this point.
Ray, does it change anything you'll be doing there at Eddyville?
No, we kind of run a consolidated position with all of our business unit plants and got a central hedging desk up in Minneapolis for that.
Okay, I've got another question for you, Ray. And I don't know whether you'll have an answer or not, but there's been a push among the bottlers, producers of beverages to go healthier. Will that have an impact on your plant over time, or as usage just continue to grow?
Well, actually, the demand for high fructose corn syrup has been in somewhat a slow but steady structural decline. There were a couple of changes when global sugar got real tight and we were exporting some fructose. But I've been reading stories this week about obesity taxes, advertising, and all of those things. And I think over the course of time that it will probably lead to a smaller consumption of high fructose corn syrup.
On that note, I think we will finish up. Any final word from each of you? Matt Bennett, do you have some thoughts?
Yeah, I think that if we do get into a weather market situation for producers who haven't, who feel like they need to make some catch-up sales, I definitely don't want to get super bullish as the market goes up. Really want guys to be very intentional about figuring their cost of production and knowing exactly what these market moves mean to their bottom line, because obviously margins are thin, and I don't think that we can expect to have huge margins this year. If we can get anything, let's be happy with that. But, hopefully we'll get some sort of a marketing opportunity that's better than what we've been seeing recently. And if we do get those, I think a guy has to, be proactive.
Matt Bennett is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Bill Mayer is with Strategic Farm Marketing. He's in Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah, I guess I would expect the next 30 days here going into the report at the end of the month, I would expect volatility to pick up. I think it got a chance to give us some good opportunities. I think you have to be ready to make sales and put some protection on. As Matt was saying, I think you have to be proactive. And don't forget to pay attention to what's going on in the December 2016 and November 2016 contracts, because it may create some opportunities for looking out further than just this year.
Thank you, Bill. And Ray Jenkins is with us as well. He's at Cargill Corn Milling out of Eddyville, Iowa. Some thoughts from you, Ray.
Well, we've spent two good years with larger corn and soybean crops, rebuilding our grain stocks here in the United States. I don't know if we're in year three or we're ready for a hiccup, but I think I would probably be encouraging people to be using options here as we get into this next 2 to 3 week time period, if we can get a rally here, because we just won't know the outcome for a long time.
Our panelists this week have included Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting in Windsor, Illinois, and Ray Jenkins of Cargill Corn Milling at Eddyville, Iowa. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.